ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Dan Cashel, a thought leader, humanitarian, angel investor, and business growth specialist. After starting his first company at 22 years old, Dan has owned multiple companies and has had over 22 years of experience helping businesses grow exponentially. Dan is also the founder of Growth to Freedom, prosperitybasedliving.com, creator of Millionaire's Mindset, and best-selling author of Bootstrap Business, and A Champion in the Making, Awaken the Champion Within Your Life, Business, and Relationships, and More. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you today.
So let's begin with a little bit of background around your career. You have over 22 years of experience helping businesses grow. Can you give us the Cliff Notes version of your background, sort of the highlights?
Yeah, Cliff Notes version. Let's see. I became obsessed with human behavior psychology all the way back in the late 80s when I got a position in a direct response marketing company that was sending out mail, that we were doing TV, we were doing radio, and I was fascinated by the fact that people would respond to these things quickly and they would send money for products. It was amazing. And I started studying it and fell in love with it. It was going through college. And out of college, Gabriella, I decided, you know what, I could do this better than what I had learned. And so I started my very first company in 1992 as I got out of college. And since that time, fast forward today, I've had 12 companies, which means a few things. One, I've had some failures along the way, right? Some speed bumps, some failures, or as Dan Sullivan, a strategic coach, says, extreme market research.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And so I've had a handful of failures. I've had a few seven-figure companies, a few eight-figure companies, exited a couple, sold and bought some companies. So I've been very blessed and very fortunate in a lot of ways. And today, I get to help business owners, experts, go out and have a bigger impact, a bigger reach, bigger contribution, helping them get more new clients using integrated sales, integrated marketing to help grow and scale their business. That's a lot of fun.
Right, right. Well, the landscape has really changed during that time. So when creating a profitable, sustainable company, what are some of the biggest marketing trends that are happening right now?
Well, biggest marketing trends, of course, there's this idea that technology is simplifying our world. But like as you're listening right now, is it simplifying your world or making it more complicated?
Right. No, it's a little more complicated.
Yeah, it's almost becoming like the Loch Ness Monster. People have heard about the idea of simplicity with technology, but they haven't seen it yet.
Right? Absolutely.
So I think part of it is, you know, we're in a whole new world with having so much opportunity, so many resources, so many tools at our disposal. And it's almost like shiny object syndrome that we have to battle. So I think the great leaders are the ones who really narrow it down to three key areas. The higher achievers are the ones who are very certain about their not to-do list.
Right.
And in fact, that not to-do list becomes far more important than the to-do list, right?
Right.
And then also because many entrepreneurs or leaders are very creative in spirit and nature, having a place for those ideas, those crazy ideas that we get, you know, having a place to put them, you know, so having a place like a not now list and whatever we call it, I think where things are going with the great leaders is they have discerned, you know, these types of things one way or another with a to-do list, a not-to-do list, and a not-now list to give themselves more peace of mind and more focus and the ability to go do the things that are more important. So those are a couple ideas that pop in my head.
It's interesting that it's to-do and then not-now and not-to-do, which feels like some negatives. And we always think about, you know, all the positive thinking. So if you have a not-now list, when do you tackle your not-now list? When do you set aside to do that? How do you... Because the other thing with very successful people is they're always going, going, going. So how do you carve out that time and when should that time be?
by having the not to-do list or the not now list, at least an action is captured. And for a lot of creative types, that ends up being a very peaceful place, right? And then the other side of it happens with like the not now list is it gives you a place to come back to and go, oh yeah, let me move that up on my priorities. And at some point it may jump the list and end up on the to-do list as a priority. But the other thing that it does is for the entrepreneur, you know, so many of us are looking for peace and harmony and we're looking for balance. And I personally feel a lot of that is nonsense.
Really?
Yeah. I think integrated life is a way that I have chosen to look at it.
Uh-huh.
And here's why. I think the highest achievers in the world are the types that are obsessive. They are the types that are neurotic. They are a mentor I learned from years ago, he said, the world advances on the backs of our neurotic. His name's Gary Halbert, and he's since passed. But I mean, that quote has stuck with me for decades, right?
Right.
Because think about all the great things in the world. It's advanced on the backs of its neurotics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from music to art to technology to business, etc. So one of the things that this not now and not to-do list can do as well, when you label it or name it and then you put it in some kind of category, the mere nature of an entrepreneur, being a disruptor, being a lone wolf, being the rugged individualist, the bull in the china shop, right, the black sheep, the one who sees things differently, what happens is it's like an irritated oyster.
Right.
Ultimately, that irritation grows to become a pearl through the creative genius and spirit of an entrepreneur, as I've seen it, and you know, in some ways has happened to me too. So that's a couple ways that I see it play out in on both sides.
Right, right. So one of the things that a lot of people talk about, sort of growth hacks and ways to skip ahead. And do you have any feelings about sort of, well, these things are myths and these things are true, like in terms of the hacks that help you scale the mountain faster?
Well, I could give you some diplomatic answer, but you know.
Oh, come on. Don't be so diplomatic.
So I'll go the contrary. And a lot of these labels that people come up with, you know, in many ways I laugh at and go, that's somebody attempting good marketing to position themselves so that they're considered the definitive expert at that thing, right? I don't know that there's a perfect system to shortcut or hack or this sort of thing. And at the end of the day, it comes down to values that we decide. Like, what do you value most? Which will be different than what I probably value most in some ways. But when we can work with people, whether it's clients, whether it's team members, whether it's family, when we're aligned in values, magic happens. Right. So I have a tendency to cling. I'm not a big tactician. You know, I see so many, here's what myths I see that just send so many business owners, so many entrepreneurs, so many leaders down wrong paths, is they fall in love with tactics. They fall in love with the shiny new object, the thing that's supposedly going to get them the result. And I'm more into the strategy of things or the psychology of it. Right. Because when you can master, and I'm far, in my opinion, from mastering it. I'm working to be better all the time. But when we can pursue mastery of the psychology or the strategy, then when a tactic comes along, when a new technology, you know, let's simplify it. People trying to leverage Facebook paid traffic, which, you know, is a fascination for a lot of small businesses today. That's a tactic. But if you under if you've mastered or gotten some mastery of the strategy first, you can just incorporate Facebook easier, better, faster, more profitably. But if you're the tactician and always chasing the tactic to try to get that shortcut, to get that hack, it'll work temporarily. But then what happens when a change happens, like we're seeing, we're right in the middle of right now, huge, major, I mean, it's gonna disrupt so many companies in the next few months that many companies that were riding the highlight of that tactic likely will be gone in the next several months because of it being a tactical focus thing. So if I were to encourage you to have a bias, it would be a bias towards strategy or the psychology of the thing and then incorporate the tactic. When you lead with tactics, then what happens is you come and go like the wind or a leaf blowing in the wind because tactics change all the time.
Right. Well, here's a question for you. There is a lot of change in the media landscape, and we're seeing consolidation and with the legacy players. And so as a result of this, we're seeing some people become what I like to call surprise entrepreneurs. They've been a company man or a woman most of their career, and they are exiting, and they are initially at least becoming a consultant because they have deep experience, but they really haven't played on that side of the fence. And so they're new to being an entrepreneur. They're new to being a consultant. There is a certain amount of ageism in the industry. And so while they might be looking for an opportunity to go back in-house somewhere that may or may not be an opportunity for them, how should they think about growth and success where this is sort of the second half of their career and they're surprise entrepreneurs? Do you have any advice for somebody like that? To what kind of tactics should they avoid? How should they think about things strategically?
Wow, that's a lot of different options I've got to grab onto, right? So what I would say, what pops out is this. If one, you know, I lean on the Peter Drucker quote, which is business has two functions, business and innovation. Mm-hmm. Everything else is a cost.
Right.
Focus in on the highest use, highest leverage type things. And for my time and energy, what I have found is that marketing pays the highest dividend, but it's the most misunderstood. It's probably one of those areas that has the highest percentage of misunderstanding or myths or false beliefs around it, only because people haven't really been educated on the power of marketing. My version of marketing, and I love this quote from Joe Polish, which is marketing is what you do when someone is already predisposed, pre-qualified, pre-interested, and pre-ready to do business with you, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a good position to be in. Like that's what marketing is. Selling, on the other, which is often confused with marketing. And so understanding the difference between the selling is what you do when you get people on the phone or face-to-face with you, pre-positioned, pre-motivated, pre-qualified, and ready to do business with you, right? And so when you combine the two, you know, it's magical what can happen. And in a way I could best describe it, it's like I'm a big sports fan, so I apologize if you're not a sports fan listening to this right now, but I think you'll understand the simplicity of this idea overall. But my son, he's 10 years old, and he's kind of taken a real love into flag football. And so even though it's a smaller kid's game, it's they still do kickoffs, right, like a football game would be. So if you can imagine a kickoff, and let's say my son takes the ball and he catches it at the goal line. So they've kicked it off. He catches it at the goal line. And let's say he runs it out like 5 yards and then he gets knocked down or whatever, right? So he's down 5 yards later. So now their team has 95 yards to go, right? So Putting it in terms of what we're talking about here, that's marketing for some companies. Some companies, they do very little marketing. They don't understand marketing, or they just aren't very good at it, and they've only gone 5 yards. Now, what does that mean for the business, right? That means now that business has to make up for the marketing with 95% selling.
Oh.
Right?
Right.
On the other hand, let's say your family member catches the ball at the goal line and they're much better than my son. And they catch it at the goal line, make a move, take it up the sideline, go about 85 yards and get taken down, right? And now they only have 15 yards to put it in the end zone. So that's your marketing. And you've done really effective marketing. It's pre-positioned, pre-qualified, pre-motivated, ready to do business. You've got only a little bit of selling. Really, it's more order taking at that point. Or buying going on. So it's this psychology, which is how, especially in the future, this is another one kind of leading to your first question. How do you set your company up so that you are built on a buyer's culture or buyer's model versus or not a selling or seller's model?
Oh, interesting.
So like you think of the great companies today, and I think the great companies in the future will exist on this paradigm, which is the buyer's culture versus a seller's culture. What is that? Apple. You and I are not sold an Apple product. We buy that dang stuff, right?
Right.
And we line up for it and we stand in line and wait for things, for a thing that we don't even need because we already have one. It's amazing, right? They created a buying frenzy, a buying culture. A Starbucks, another good example of a buyer's culture. You know, we're not sold into Starbucks. We buy into it. So what can we do And what can we learn and how can we set our companies up to build into a buyer's culture, especially for the long, you know, you'll get more referrals this way. You'll get more advocacy this way. You'll get more positive PR. I mean, not having to be sold into it.
Right.
And that makes such a big difference. So that would be one big framework to be thinking from. Yeah.
Right. Right. Who would you say are your biggest influences in marketing? Do you, like, in terms of who should listeners be reading? Where should they be watching online? Who are the people who you think these people have the pulse?
So there's a few. Like, I observe a lot from the movie industry. So I'll give some serendipitous versions, then I'll give some direct ones, if that's all right, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I learn a ton just observing commercials and watching movies and seeing. I'm just fascinated by human behavior and plot lines and storylines, etc. Right. So another thing to think about is, how can you be a better storyteller? Here's another version of marketing, which is, it's just simply storytelling. Those companies that tell a better story are the ones who are effective and great marketers. So one, you can learn a lot from these different industries. Number two is related to direct people. You know, Jack Trout, Al Reese are a couple legends in marketing that I would highly recommend. I've learned a lot from them over the years. I love paying attention to, you know, a person like Joe Polish and Dean Jackson with their program called I Love Marketing. They're fascinating and amazing to learn from. A couple others that jump out would be, it's more of a slant of sales, but you would combine sales and marketing. There's a guy named Chris Voss. He was an ex-FBI negotiator. And I mean, he was in the trenches, like deep stuff, like his book, basically, How Not to Give in a lot of ways. And the psychology, I really appreciate, because I think his book, although it is about negotiation, so he's like one of those understated, you might not think of him as a marketer, but as I went through his material and watch what he does, it seems to me he's really darn good at it. So those are a handful. Another, like in product categories, if you want to model direct products and watch what they're doing, a guy named Dave Asprey of a company called Bulletproof Coffee, just doing some amazing things with how he structures his buyer's culture, which leads me to this. Here's a couple tips to think about in marketing. I can give some walkaway tips for your business that you can use from today. You know, I observe, like, Dave Asprey did something fascinating that nobody had really thought of doing in his industry, which is coffee, right? And we call this the four-part process to creating your MO, right, in your business. And the four steps, you know, the first one is, what is your unique market you're going for, right? So many people, big mistake, like, who are you marketing to? Oh, I could market to everybody. Well, who are you marketing? Everyone. Oh, God, you're in trouble.
Right.
You know this with what you do. The second part of it is your unique message, right? What is that unique message to that market? What is the unique method of which you deliver what it is you do? And then what is the unique offer? So that Dave Asprey, I'm going to simplify, and this is my observation of how he has built a lot of momentum in his business and ties back to even a couple of your previous questions. So his unique market is, he focuses on fitness enthusiasts who want to drink coffee. Nobody had ever really put those two together, right? Lots of people had gone after coffee, but he brought those two together. His unique message is, get fit and lose weight while you drink coffee.
Okay.
Right?
Who's going to argue with that?
Yeah, exactly. It's unique, right? It's appealing. It's compelling for people who, you know, would want to do that. And there's a lot of people that want to do that, apparently.
Sure.
Yeah. And then the unique method of, how do you do that? His is, you know, one version is, add grass-fed butter to your coffee, because it has certain...
Sorry, that sounds revolting. Sorry. Grass-fed butter to coffee that you drink?
Yes. It's amazing. Yeah, and it has
really?
These...
Okay.
Yeah. And then his unique offer is what he calls bulletproof coffee.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Right. Now, he's built this company. It's one of the fastest growing in that niche. And he was just a fascinating guy. Now, maybe you don't know Dave and you're like, well, Dan, why the hell are you talking about coffee? So let me use another one that most people have anywhere have probably seen that's probably more popularized. A company called P90X, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Beachbody owns them, but P90X. So let's use the same four steps to kind of give the example. So you've got the unique market, right? They're fitness enthusiasts. So they went a little bit more generic, and I'll even add a little app, fitness enthusiasts who tried other things that really didn't work. Right.
Right. Okay.
Right. Then their unique message is get fit, get ripped and lean in 90 days or less. That's their message. And then their unique method to do that is called muscle confusion, right? Nobody had ever heard of muscle confusion before Beachbody and Tony Horton had come up with that idea, right? The method of how, and then their offer, of course, is the P90X system. So ideally, as you're listening right now, is like, what could you do to package up and use that four-step framework to really make you not focus on being better? That's another big myth. I've got to be better than everybody in the industry. No, Sally Hogshead, who's become a friend, Sally says it so incredibly well. She says it's better to be different than better. Now, if you can be both, that's great. But if you start with trying to be better, who doesn't say they're better? And now what you've already done is you've already categorized yourself as a me too, you're commoditized, etc. So start with being different. Then as you go along, right, that's where the idea of branding can kick in later. But if you focus on being different up front, now what happens, and it's counterintuitive, right? When we think about it, right, and you probably share the same view, is the idea that sometimes when we go in a market and we go, okay, I'm going to narrow my niche. Oh my God, I'm a little nervous. I still get nervous about when I work with my clients to some degree. But here's what I found. It's counterintuitive. When you narrow your niche, you actually attract more. You don't attract less, you attract more of the people you want anyway. So I hope that as you're listening to this segment today, that you'll, as you're listening, take this four-step framework and take action with it. Put it in place. Test it. And like, come up with your version of your four categories and start singing that anthem to your team. Start singing that anthem to your vendors, to your suppliers, to your clients, of course, or your potential clients, and watch what happens. It's amazing if you'll just take the time to do that.
Now, this obviously works very well in an entrepreneurial situation. What if you're working at a big company? Can you take these same things and apply them to succeeding within a large organization?
Well, depending, right? You know, if you have, you know, so much bureaucracy where the tail's wagging the dog in so many ways, right? That it starts at the top. So I don't look at any business today, Gabriella, is like some people call it B2B, some people call it B2C. I'm just a simple guy and I look at it as P2P. It's person to person. So if you can get buy-in from the people that make the decisions at the top, it's people person to person. I mean, this can I see so much waste. Like when I look at these big companies, like to me, a small business is any company really doing 50 million or under, right? That's small business to me. These companies that I see, like, you know, they're running Super Bowl commercials and they're, you know, doing these kind of things. I look at that and I cringe going, oh my God, you're wasting so much money you could be using to do smarter, more targeted, more efficient, tracked, actually get a darn ROI out of it and not call it, put it under the guise of, ooh, well, we're doing branding today. No, you could actually spend a dollar, put it in and predictably, systematically, 100% of the time, no. Did it get me $1.10? Did it get me $1.20? Did it get me $2, $5? What did it get me? Or did it lose a little bit of money?
Right.
And that is such a critical distinction, especially for the companies 50 million or under. This works, and it works in small companies. It also works in big, but what I've seen with big companies is there was resistance, you know, that pushback and that buy-in. But when you can get it, and now I have to also admit, this is an observation of conversations I've been in. I've never really served myself and my clients with those big companies. I've targeted companies 50 million and under.
So what about you? It seems like you've progressed through quite a number of companies. And so certainly it seems like there comes a point where you've sort of hoed a certain row as far as you want to, and you're ready to try something new. What is next for you? What does the future hold for you?
My focus is working with more great people who are success-minded, have achieved a certain amount, but want to do it better, smarter, faster, right? More predictably. And so we've got a platform now that we've set up where we work with companies on two levels. One is really geared to be more of a high-touch, almost like a done for you system or solution where they bring us in like their outsourced CMO team, right?
Oh,
so we have a team of writers. I have a team of people who can build the online sales things, who can write the copy, who can, you know, run the traffic. So we have the team in place that we can do this, and we can do this with, you know, 12 to 15 clients at a time. It's more of a high-end, high-touch type service, right? but it's a fraction of the cost of what it would cost to pay for like even a CMO or a CEO, and you get a whole team to do that. So that's one. The other side of it is it's for the entrepreneur and or their team. We can help people speed the curve. So we have our own version of a virtual coaching type platform where we essentially work with a client side by side to help them put that machine in place to bring them more predictable, perfect clients, to convert those clients, to maximize the revenue in the business as a result of what they put in place, and how to finally, once and for all, use paid traffic to make it profitable and be 100% trackable all the time. So that's another campaign that we've built into, and we've got our team in place to be able to do that. So those are the couple. Our big vision is to help 1,000 additional new clients or entrepreneurs to be able to add at minimum $1 million in new revenue and impact collectively 1 billion people.
Are most of your clients in the product space? Are they in the service industry, or do they really cross different sectors?
They do cross different. So I've had to get, it's a great, great question of the, you know, I think now we're up over 5,000 some number of people that I've been able to coach or advise in over the years. You know, over 180 niche industries.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So very broad, right? It's like weird, some of these, like a couple of clients right now, I'm working with this technology company in the stem cell industry, right? Which is so fascinating. Like, this thing is either going to be immensely successful or it's going to crash because of regulations, right?
Right.
But nonetheless, it's fascinating for me to be a part of like this hip, fast growth company. And what they do is they're amazing at being able to help chiropractors build a new profit center into their business in a predictable way. And you know, that's a client. And another client we have, completely different world. It's a brick and mortar business. They're like an HVAC company, very successful company out on the East Coast. And they want to build more into predictable paid traffic media online. So we work with like a variety of industries. Now, the sweet spot, though, I will say primarily has been experts. And that shows up a few different ways, whether it's an author, an expert, whether it's an influencer, a consultant. We work with a ton of consultants as well as coaches.
So like sole proprietor kind of situations where they are the key person to their business?
Yes, but typically they have the mindset of having a team. They just may not have a lot of employees. So they're looking at building that mobile, we'll call it the mobile enterprise. So the attraction factor to what we are finding with our clients overall is they want to have a mobile business, which means it's lean, yet highly, mm-hmm. highly profitable. Yeah.
Now, who wouldn't like that, right? Well, it's like, I want a business that's fat and profitable, please.
Well, it's a new way of doing it, right? I mean, it's so like I look at even my business that I sold like 15 years ago, right? I mean, I had like 180 to 200 employees, which isn't a lot, right? I mean, in the bigger picture of these things, it's not a lot. I was a small business too. But I truly feel in my heart with clients that we've worked with and built some things, I mean, we've been able to accomplish the same kind of things with less than 20 people.
Right. Well, it really is different now. It certainly is. So much has changed. So finally, where can our listeners find you, and where can they learn more about you and your work?
Thank you, Gabriella. So the easiest way, we have an on-demand training that rotates on an ongoing basis. It's just like free education where we're sharing insights, strategies, wisdom, tips, and tools to help you get more new clients, build a steady flow of perfect client candidates, etc. So you can go learn more by going to championbusinessblueprint.com. Championbusinessblueprint.com. You just register there, and then you can get on the on-demand training series that we put out that's just free to the marketplace. And, you know, ideally, if there's something there that fits, then, you know, look, tap us on the shoulder and let us know you'd like to go deeper with some of our resources. We also have our podcast, which we're up to, you know, somewhere near 200 episodes at the time of this session. So close to 200 hours of interviews and strategies and insights with some of the top experts in these types of arenas about growing and scaling, getting new clients, growing the business, scaling profitability, etc. You can learn more about that at growththefreedom.com, growththefreedom.com, or this is the short link for the iTunes. If you have iTunes, you can go to growththefreedom.com/subscribe.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. I really appreciate it. It's been great. Lots of great stuff. And I especially love the not to-do list and the not right now list.
It's really valuable. Thank you, Gabriella.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Dan Kishal. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.